responsible adults. But then she'd seen the projected loss rates. Such a bloodless term for the deaths of hundreds of starfighter pilots. Very few belters would be comfortable with flying such craft, knowing the odds of long-term survival to be poor. "I'll leave you to handle it," she said, rising. "And inform me when you intend to launch the next set of exercises."
"Aye, Captain."
She walked out of the compartment and down the long corridor to engineering. The ship felt different now, in so many ways. Haddock had never been so crowded before, even though her crew was tiny. But then the living spaces had been tiny too. It wasn't really her ship any longer, she felt. The freighter she had loved had been replaced by a mobile community she didn't quite know how to handle. She found it difficult to understand how fleet carrier commanders coped. Their crews numbered in the thousands. Vasilios Thrakopoulos looked up as she entered the compartment.
"Captain?"
"Vas," Abigail said. "A word?" Thrakopoulos nodded and motioned her to step into his cabin. It also doubled as his office, insofar as he had one. He didn't spend much time in it, Abigail knew. When he wasn't sleeping, he was in engineering. There was always something to fix on the ship or journals to read. His cramped cabin was really nothing more than a place to sleep.
"The Navy thinks the system glitched," she said shortly. "Do you agree?"
"I think so," Thrakopoulos said. "Basically, the system got confused." He started to lurch into an explanation. Abigail held up a hand, cutting him off. He would have taken part in Maddie's investigation, and if he'd had doubts, he would have taken them to her long ago. She didn't need to hear more technobabble.
"That's not the issue at the moment," she said. "Will it happen again?"
"I don't know," Thrakopoulos admitted.
"Captain, we've spliced together quite a few systems that were never designed to work together. And we didn't have time to stress test any but the most important systems. I can point to a dozen places that could glitch, Captain. Yet I don't know which ones will glitch. And there's nothing we can do about it,"
Abigail said. She cursed under her breath. It was sheer luck that no one had been killed. This time. The next time might be a great deal worse. And then... She shook her head in dismay. The belt might understand that accidents happened, but this... The Royal Navy would want answers. And then it would probably try to turn her into a scapegoat.
"At least it wasn't deliberate," she muttered. "I don't think so, Captain," Thrakopoulos agreed. "There would be no way to know who'd be targeted."
Abigail made a face. Perhaps Alan's wife had had a friend who was now serving on Haddock. A friend who might want to avenge her death. Or... She shook her head in annoyance. That was the stuff of bad detective novels or late-night movies that required only that the viewer sat and watched. No, logic dictated that the glitch had been nothing more than a glitch. The real problem was that it might happen again, and next time, someone might die.
"Fuck," she said. "See what you can do to minimize the risks. I'd like to tear out all the older systems and replace them,"
Thrakopoulos said. He lifted his bushy eyebrows.
"Is that likely to happen?"
Abigail made a rude sound.
"What do you think?"
She looked down at the hard metal deck. The Royal Navy was unlikely to authorize a refit that would take Haddock out of service for at least 6 months. It would be cheaper to build a modern freighter from scratch, or a purpose-built escort carrier, come to think of it. And there was no way she could afford to purchase top-of-the-line gear without the Navy's contribution. They'd just wind up more in debt than ever before. Thrakopoulos cleared his throat.
"I'll see about stress testing some of the less important systems," he said. "But you know what could happen if it really doesn't live up to specifications."
Abigail nodded curtly. If the stress test was too good or the equipment too frail, the whole system would collapse. And then the Navy would demand explanations for that too.
"Do the best you can," she ordered. She rose, careful not to bang her head on the metal ceiling. I'll be on the bridge.
In summary, we will be conducting more exercises over the next 2 weeks, Alan concluded, after a long discussion of the exercise.
The starfighter pilots looked back at him with varying degrees of interest.
By the time we arrive at New Russia, I want to have us working together as a team.
He paused.
Any questions?
But what about our scores?
Green leaned forward sharply.
We have to rack up the kills.
Alan bit down on several nasty responses.
Bugger the scores, he said finally.
He waved a hand at the nearest bulkhead.
This ship is our home. Blasting 100 alien starfighters into dust will not save our asses if this ship is also blown into dust. Our job is not racking up the kills, but protecting the ship. Let me know if you have a problem with that, and I'll beat you.
Green, thankfully, had the wisdom to keep his mouth shut. Alan sighed inwardly. It hadn't dawned on them yet that they could win the battle and still lose the war. Or at least their lives. Starfighter pilots rarely saw anything of the bigger picture. But he had to keep it in mind at all times. Perhaps it would be better, he told himself, if he didn't take a starfighter into combat again.
But I'm not going to stop, he thought wryly. I can't stay cooped inside forever. I'll go mad. Report to your bunk beds and get some sleep,
Alan finished.
We'll be going back outside tomorrow morning.
He sat back and watched as the starfighter pilots filed out of the room. Some of them were cheerfully discussing the prospects for shore leave on New Russia. Others were more subdued, as they thought about just how badly things could have gone. Death was a constant threat, but dying because of friendly fire, when they were trying to land on the carrier, of all things, would be particularly galling. Hopefully the incident would concentrate a few minds. They were at war. Bennett cleared his throat.
An unusually blunt assessment from you.
Thank you, Alan said suspiciously. He'd been ruthless, tearing apart everything that had happened and highlighting every mistake. He rather suspected he'd sounded more like a flying instructor than a CAG. His first CAG had never talked to him as though he was a naughty schoolboy. And yet praise from Bennett was rare.
Do you have any thoughts? The one point you missed, Bennett said.
He smiled, but it didn't touch his eyes.
A point I suspect you didn't want to acknowledge.
Alan eyed him for a long moment.
For once, Bennett didn't sound like he was having a go at Alan. Instead, he sounded almost thoughtful. Perhaps it was an act. No, Bennett had no reason to act. They were alone. He could spend the next hour insulting Alan, and no one would ever know.
There's a lot of points I don't want to acknowledge, he said finally. Which one do you have in mind? You're still alive, Bennett said.
Alan blinked.
Is that a bad thing?
Bennett shrugged.
The point defense railguns fire at you from practically point-blank range, he said. Maybe not knife range, but still. They should have scored a direct hit. It wasn't as though you were corkscrewing your way towards the ship. You should have been hit. I jerked out of the way, Alan protested. I checked the records, Bennett told him. You should have been hit. At that range, you shouldn't have been able to evade the pellets. How terrible, Alan said dryly. Quite, Bennett agreed. What happens when a real target makes a real attack run?
Alan scowled. He didn't want to admit it, but Bennett had a point. Perhaps the railguns hadn't been zeroed properly. And that meant...
We need to check the whole system again, he said.
They'd been very busy in the last few days before leaving Earth. Something had clearly been overlooked. The real question was how much else had been overlooked.
And probably do a few more test firings.
He made a face.
Target drones cost over £1 million apiece, which was why the Navy had been reluctant to assign any to Haddock. She was an escort carrier, the bean counters had said. She'd never see real combat. It was more important to get the drones out to the fleet carriers, where they'd make a really important contribution. Simulated firing exercises weren't bad. Mucking about with live ammo was always risky. But they were useless if the weapons weren't zeroed properly. Perhaps, in hindsight, the whole incident had been a blessing in disguise.
"Melbourne might have a few drones we can borrow," he said,
although it was unlikely.
"If not, we can probably rig up a few makeshift targets and dump them out there for target practice, and then try and get the weapon calibrated properly."
"Good thinking," Bennett said. "Perhaps there is something to be said for letting you out of jail after all."
"And now you're back to being an asshole,"
Alan said crossly. It had been foolish of him to think, even for a moment, that he could have any actual camaraderie with Bennett. They were from very different worlds.
"Do you have any other points you want to make?"
"Stay in the CIC and let the squadron commanders handle their jobs," Bennett said. "You don't want to give them the impression that they can be pushed aside at any moment, do you?"
Alan sighed. If he could convince Whitehead or Savage to take his place. He shook his head. Bennett would never let him get away with it. Besides, neither of them were qualified to serve as CAG for very long. They could probably handle the job if Alan died, at least until a replacement was assigned to the ship. But there would be problems. Some of them would probably haunt the ship for years.
"Not least because someone who does the job will resent being pushed aside by a newcomer," Alan thought.
He'd seen once good crews collapse when someone's morale had been accidentally destroyed.
"Or because it will be a long time before anyone appoints a replacement for me."
Bennett cleared his throat. Alan realized he hadn't actually answered the question.
"I suppose not," he said. "But you do realize I might have to go out there."
"You might," Bennett agreed. "And if you do, you do. But until then..."
He made a show of checking his watch.
"You better get some sleep. Morning will come far too soon."
Alan cocked his head.
"You're not coming?"
"I have a report to write," Bennett said. "And a couple of letters to my family."
"Just remember, they'll be going through the censors,"
Alan reminded him.
"Poor Jock didn't get that memo."
Bennett smiled. Alan smiled too, although it wasn't really that funny. Flight Lieutenant Jock Hazelton's V-mail to his girlfriend had been shockingly explicit, including footage of him performing sex acts in the shower. Thankfully, no one else in the squadron knew what he had done. They'd either laugh at him or be horrified, depending on their mood. The censors, for better or worse, had forwarded the V-mail to Alan. He'd had to chew Hazelton out for sending it. In truth, he wasn't sure which one of them had been more embarrassed.
"My siblings don't want that sort of letter," Bennett assured him. "I just have to avoid committing outright lies to paper."
"True," Alan agreed.
That could be embarrassing if they were the wrong kind of lies. There was nothing particularly shameful about serving on a fleet carrier. But Bennett was very obviously not a naval officer.
"We don't want them to think you're a Walt."
Bennett pointed at the hatch.
"Out!"
Laughing, Alan did as he was told. Chapter 13.
"Transit complete, Captain," Anson said. "Welcome to New Russia."
Abigail nodded curtly as the display began to fill up with green, blue and yellow lights. The convoy, slowly slipping back into formation as the ships transited one by one. Military starships, holding position near the planet. Interplanetary spacecraft, fewer than she'd expected, moving between New Russia and the daughter colonies scattered all over the system. New Russia was nowhere near as industrialized or as densely populated as Earth, but it was still impressive. The system had only been inhabited for 90 years.
Poddy, inform the CIC that we have arrived, she ordered. Anson, take us out with the rest of the convoy.
She leaned back in her chair, silently grateful that the mission was nearly over. There hadn't been any more incidents, but they'd kept picking up vague sensor contacts that could have been anything. Commodore Banks had launched starfighters after some of the contacts, more solid than most apparently, yet they'd found nothing. Abigail was torn between assuming the contacts were stray flickers of energy. Space wasn't actually silent, no matter what the ground pounders claimed, and a feeling that something awful was about to happen.
But nothing I can put my fingers on, she thought crossly, and nothing I can take to Commodore Banks.
A low shudder ran through the ship.
We're moving now, Captain, Anson said. Apparently, we're going straight to New Russia.
Poddy glanced back at her.
Sure, leave. Don't count on it,
Abigail growled. She wasn't sure she would allow Poddy to go down to the surface, assuming it was an option. New Russia was hardly the exclusion zone on Earth, but she'd heard stories. Russia was hardly the friendliest place for foreigners, and New Russia, she suspected, would be even worse.
It isn't as if we've been on this ship for a year and a day.
Poddy looked disappointed.
But, ma'am, your mother is not in charge here, Abigail said sharply.
And wasn't that a bitter pill to swallow? She was absolute mistress of her ship, as long as she did what she was told. But then there had always been limits to her power. Taking the ship on a deliberately unprofitable voyage would have cost her everything.
You will get what you get, and be happy with it.
She felt a flicker of guilt at the way Poddy's face crumpled, snapping at her daughter. She hadn't done that, not much. Poddy had made mistakes, of course, but she hadn't done any of them deliberately. Abigail could hardly have punished her daughter for mistakes she had made herself when she'd been a young girl. And Poddy had learned from her mistakes. She'd certainly never made the same mistake twice.
We don't know where we'll be going next, she said, lowering her voice. If we spend a week or two in orbit, we might just be able to arrange something.
You could spend a few weeks in VR, Anson suggested. Put on a headset and block out the world.
It isn't real, Poddy said. Is it?
Abigail shrugged. She'd never really cared for VR entertainment. The games were fun, sometimes, but they gave her headaches when reality warred with fantasy. And the VR movies were even worse. There was no way to give up completely and slip into the story, doing things that she knew she could never do. Her brain just refused to surrender its grip on reality.
It would be a distraction, she said curtly. You could also spend a few hours studying for your next exam. That would be a kick in the backside, would it not?
She leaned back in her chair, watching the holographic display. The system was so sharp that she wanted to keep it after the war was over. Perhaps they could work something out with the military. Or... She shrugged, watching the fleet carriers as they held position near the planet. Like all belters, she was suspicious of the great powers and their massive warships, but she had to admit she was glad they'd been built now. The universe was nowhere near as peaceful as she'd thought.
They look impressive, she thought ruefully.
The smallest fleet carrier was 2 kilometers long, bristling with weapons and surrounded by a swarm of starfighters. Haddock was hardly small, but she'd vanished without trace in the immensity of their hulls.
And if they're as powerful as they look, perhaps the aliens will think twice before engaging us.
ETA roughly 1 hour, 40 minutes, Anson said. A couple of ships are lagging.
I suppose that speaks well of Banks, Abigail said.
She'd known military officers who appeared to believe that their engineers routinely overestimated how long it would take to complete repairs.
Better to slow the convoy than risk leaving ships behind.
It isn't as if anyone actually was following us, Anson said. And if they were, surely they would have ambushed us somewhere short of New Russia.
Abigail shrugged. She was no military officer, but she understood the realities of spaceflight far better than any pampered desk flyer on Earth. They'd crossed a star system that was empty, save for a handful of asteroids and a lone comet. The perfect place for an ambush, she'd thought at the time. But realistically, if the aliens were careful, they could ambush the convoy in the new Russia system. They'd just have to complete the slaughter before the warships could race to the rescue.
"We shall see," she said.
The sense of looming disaster refused to fade, no matter how much she bombarded it with cold logic. Her eyes kept straying to Tramline 4, leading towards Vera Cruz. Who knew what was lurking on the far side? There would be scouts watching the other tramlines, wouldn't there?
"Until then, concentrate on your duties."
"And I shall do the same," she told herself. The minutes ticked away, one by one. She was agonizingly aware of each and every passing second. Haddock speed had never been a problem before. Abigail had known her ship was slow compared to some, but now she just wanted to overload the drives and rush to New Russia. And yet it would be pointless. There was no way she could boost their speed enough to matter. All it would do, if she tried, would get her in trouble with the Navy. They wouldn't thank her for embarrassing them in front of countless foreign eyes.
12 fleet carriers, she thought numbly. And only 2 of them are ours.
It was an odd thought. She was British. She held a Royal Navy Reserve Commission, for God's sake. And yet, she'd never considered herself truly British. She'd been part of the Belt since birth, heir to a civilization that lacked the hang-ups and foibles of those who remained resolutely trapped in the gravity well. She liked to think she was part of something better. Hell, she was part of something better. She'd seen enough of Earth to know she didn't want to live there. A person who shot his mouth off at the wrong time could easily wind up in jail. Or worse. And yet, looking at the carriers, she felt an odd flicker of pride. She thought. Anson's console chimed.
"Captain, I'm picking up an all-ships alert," he snapped.
His voice was suddenly hard.
"Hostile starships have been detected."
Abigail sat upright.
"Order all hands to battle stations," she ordered.
She keyed her console, opening a channel to the CIC.
"Alan, we've picked up an alert."
"Understood," Alan said.
He sounded calm, thankfully.
"We're rushing to launch stations now."
Abigail nodded. She wasn't sure if Alan was truly calm or if he was just faking it, but she was glad he sounded calm anyway. She sure as hell didn't feel calm. The alert had been passed from ship to ship, but no red icons had appeared on the display. A drill? An all-ships drill? It was possible, yes. She shook her head. Commodore Banks wasn't the sort of asshole who would hold a surprise drill just before they reached safe harbor.
"Where are they?"
Poddy barely glanced up from her console.
"Where are they?"
"Lost in space," Anson said.
"Or just out of sensor range?"
Abigail nodded curtly. Unless the aliens had some kind of drive technology that no one had ever heard of, in which case the war was probably already lost, it would take them some time to reach New Russia. There was certainly no hope of outrunning whatever warning message had been sent, not when the message was racing into the system at the speed of light. The fastest starship ever clocked had barely been able to make a third of the speed of light.
"And only then, by overloading the drive fields until the nodes started to melt," she thought grimly. "A modern starship might be able to do better, but..."
She pushed the thought aside as she studied the empty display. The fleet carriers were launching hundreds of starfighters, tiny icons blurring together as her sensors struggled to isolate individual craft. Beyond them, the planet's orbital defenses were launching their own starfighters and shuttles. It couldn't be a drill then, she thought as she watched the escort craft move into position. No one would waste so much time and effort on a drill. Her thoughts seemed to freeze, just for a second, as red icons flared into existence. They were close to the fleet carriers. Too close. Her mind yammered in horror as it tried to grasp what had just happened.
That should have been impossible. The aliens were far too close to the fleet carriers. That should have been impossible. Had they somehow used New Russia's gravity field as a makeshift tramline? It was theoretically possible, but...
She felt ice running down her spine. If it was possible, the aliens might have a very real advantage over the defenders.
But where did they come from?
Poddy's voice was plaintive.
Mum, they didn't come through the tramlines. They must have done,
Anson said. Abigail wasn't so sure. The aliens were in the wrong place for a least time transit from Tramline 4. Or for any tramline, as far as she could tell. It was quite possible they'd sneaked into the system and altered course long before they'd been detected, but it was odd. Either they were utterly confident in their superiority, or what? Did they have a way of jumping through star systems without using the tramlines? Nearly two centuries of dedicated research hadn't been able to create a working FDL drive that didn't use the tramlines. But there were theories.
Orders from the flag, Poddy said. We're to alter course, away from the combat zone. Very good, Abigail said. Anson, see to it.
We should be helping them,
Anson muttered.
We're not going to be able to do much, Abigail pointed out, and the military won't want us underfoot.
She sucked in her breath as she studied the alien fleet. It was hard to make out many details. The alien seemed to be using some kind of stealth field to confuse her senses. But it was clear that they had brought at least 8 fleet carriers to New Russia. Or at least they were the right size to be fleet carriers. She wondered, absently, just how many starfighters each of them could deploy. If the aliens had cut down on weapons and armor, they might have been able to cram extra starfighters into their hulls. Or... She shook her head. There was no way to know.
The fleet is attempting to signal the aliens, Poddy said. No response.
Like they're going to say anything now, Anson muttered.
Concentrate on your job, Abigail ordered.
She studied the alien formation for a long moment. The aliens were moving towards New Russia, forcing the MNF to block their advance, yet there was something sloppy about it. The aliens were both immensely capable. They had to be, if they'd managed to get so close without being detected. And immensely stupid. She didn't like it. Some of the sneakiest people she had met had been very good at pretending to be idiots, at least until they got what they wanted. What did the aliens want?
They're not replying, Poddy said.
Abigail nodded slowly. The aliens were practically standing still, on an interplanetary scale. It made no sense. Why not drive on New Russia? Why give the MNF all the time it could possibly need to launch starfighters and prepare for combat? Why? Her console bleeped.
The Commodore is deploying drones, Alan said. We're going to go on a little detour.
Good thinking, Abigail said slowly.
Haddock and the rest of the escorts couldn't add much to the firepower already facing the aliens. And yet, something kept nagging at the back of her mind. The aliens were being obliging, suspiciously obliging. What are they doing?
I don't know, Alan said.
More green and blue icons winked into existence. Smaller ships coming to join the defense.
But we can't let them dominate the rest of the system unchallenged.
He sounded as perturbed as herself. Abigail was torn between finding that reassuring and scary. She would have preferred to be told she was being silly. She wouldn't have liked it. There were too many military officers who looked down their noses at merchant spaces. But it would have set her mind at rest. Instead, Alan seemed to be having doubts himself. What were the aliens doing?
We have the advantage, don't we?
She keyed her console, bringing up the fleet list. There was no way to be sure, but it looked as though the MNF outmassed its opponent by quite a considerable margin.
We have enough firepower to make them regret sticking their noses into our space.
Perhaps, Alan said. I've seen platoons of Royal Marines pitched against hordes of rampaging fanatics, a new voice said.
Bennett. He sounded as though he was recalling a pleasant memory.
They have numbers, but we have superior weapons. We mow them down in their hundreds, then dump the bodies in the ditches. It looks like we're going to be overrun. We call in helicopters and long-range artillery, even orbital strikes. The bastards don't stand a chance.
Abigail felt a shiver of disquiet. She'd known there were endless skirmishes on Earth, but she shuddered. Better to tap the endless resources of space and leave those who wanted to stay in the mud to their fate. Her mother might have been a mail-order bride, a whore, some less enlightened people had called her, until Abigail had taught them better. But at least she'd had the sense to leave. Life in Britain was hard enough. She dreaded to think what life in the exclusion zone must be like, particularly for women. Hard times were always hardest on the women. But she took Bennett's point. The wooden navies of the Napoleonic era might have looked impressive. She'd watched a few historical dramas, but they wouldn't have lasted long against an ironclad ship. And then the battleships had given way to aircraft carriers, which in turn had fallen to cruise missiles and orbital kinetic strikes. The aliens might just have a technological advantage that would tip the balance of power permanently in their favor.
But they could have driven straight on Earth, she thought. We had enough time to move entire fleets to New Russia while they dawdled. They should have reached the system within a fortnight of Vera Cruz, before we knew that alien life was more than a myth.
Her blood turned to ice.
Unless we did what they wanted us to do.
The display shifted rapidly. Clouds of starfighters lanced away from the MNF, heading straight for the alien fleet. Starfighters leading the way, followed by torpedo bombers. She winced, remembering some of the combat simulations they'd run. A full-size fleet carrier wouldn't stand a chance if so many starfighters and bombers roared down on her. Haddock would be vaporized by a force a tenth of the size. It looked an irresistible force.
Something is wrong, she said.
I know, Alan agreed.
His voice was tightly controlled.
But what else can they do?
Abigail swallowed. The MNF couldn't just sit there and do nothing, could it? There was no way the Russians would want to surrender the rest of their system, no matter how the other nations felt about it. And besides, no one would want to leave the MNF pinned against New Russia while the aliens made mischief elsewhere. And yet,
they're not launching starfighters,
she breathed. It was the strangest, most alien thing of all.
Where are their starfighters?
Perhaps they don't have starfighters, Anson suggested. Or perhaps...
New red icons flared into existence on the display. Abigail heard Alan's stunned curse through the intercom as he struggled to process what they were seeing. The aliens did have starfighters. Starfighters that had somehow managed to appear between the MNF and its starfighters. Starfighters that were roaring straight towards the fleet carriers. Abigail watched in horror as the human starfighter formation came apart, the pilot seemingly unsure what to do. Should they continue the offensive against the enemy carriers or turn back to reinforce the CSP?
Shit!
Anson said. Abigail stared in horror. The alien starfighters were descending on the human carriers, firing. Abigail wasn't sure what they were firing. Super-hot flashes of energy? Plasma pulses? Human plasma cannons had never managed to do more than fire a handful of shots before overloading and exploding, if they lasted long enough to do that. But the alien weapons were firing constantly, burning deep into their target's hull. And HMS Formidable vanished from the display with a sudden, terrible finality. Chapter 14. For a long moment, Alan refused to believe his eyes. HMS Formidable was an illustrious class fleet carrier. 2 kilometers long, carrying 4 entire wings of starfighters and a crew of over 1,000. He'd served on her once upon a time. She couldn't be gone. But her icon was gone, replaced by an expanding cloud of debris and hundreds of alien starfighters seeking new targets. She was just gone. He stared, trying to understand what it meant. Captain Napier, if his former CO was still in command, was dead. Commander Higgins was dead. Wing commanders Arden and Smith were dead. Everyone he'd known on the ship, if they'd still been on the ship, was dead. Unless they'd had a chance to get to the life pods. But there was no hint that any life pods had made it off the giant carrier before she died. Bennett poked him hard.
Snap out of it!
Alan glared at him. Bennett didn't understand. Her fleet carrier had been torn apart in less than a minute. And that meant... He shuddered as a Russian carrier staggered under a hail of plasma bolts, exploding into debris bare seconds after the attack began. The alien starfighters didn't seem to be that much faster than their human counterparts, but they definitely seemed to be more maneuverable. And they all packed one hell of a punch. The plasma cannons tipped the odds squarely in their favor. He forced himself to watch as a third carrier died, then shuddered as the human starfighters tried to press their offensive against the alien ships. But the aliens had mounted plasma weapons on their starships too, putting out hundreds of thousands of plasma bursts every second. Their firing didn't seem to be very accurate, but it didn't need to be. All they had to do was break up the human formations and prevent the torpedo bombers from closing on their targets. Hundreds of starfighters died before someone, whoever had assumed command, ordered a retreat. And yet it wouldn't be enough. 2 more human carriers had died while he was watching the starfighters.
Signal from the flag,
Maddie said. She sounded badly shaken. She'd served long enough to understand the implications.
We're to alter course towards Tramline 2 and run silent.
Run silent, Alan thought sarcastically. As if we have a hope of remaining hidden.
He gritted his teeth as the disastrous battle unfolded in front of him. The MNF seemed to have fallen apart, pilots flying with whatever wingmen they could find, rather than staying in their national formations. British pilots flew beside Russians. Americans flew beside Chinese. And it didn't seem to matter. The aliens fought with a cold, lethal precision, concentrating on the remaining fleet carriers and warships. Their plasma weapons really had tipped the scale, the analytical part of his mind noted. They didn't have to keep some of their starfighters in reserve, did they? They certainly didn't need a CSP. Another icon, USS Obama, vanished from the display. 4 more warships followed her into destruction. 3 frigates and a cruiser. The MNF command network, such as it was, appeared to have gone down completely. The flagship was gone, as were the 2 secondary command ships. No one might be sure who should be in command, let alone who was in command. The loss of the data net meant certain destruction if they didn't manage to withdraw in time.
Which isn't going to happen, he thought numbly. The carriers can't get out of the killing zone.
He was beyond shock now, his thoughts sluggish as he watched the display. Part of him felt as though he was watching a training simulation, with the enemy forces drawn from a science fantasy rather than real life. And yet it was real. He forced himself to think, assessing the situation as best as he could. The alien starfighters definitely didn't appear to be any faster than their human counterparts, but they could still catch a retreating fleet carrier. Only 3 carriers were left now, drawing fire from hundreds of alien craft. Alan sourly admired the alien discipline as they closed on their targets. Their pilots didn't seem to be wasting time shooting down other starfighters. A low quiver ran through Haddock. Alan glanced at the display,
half convinced that the aliens were already coming after them. But instead, the escort carrier was slowly turning away, retreating with the rest of the convoy. Commodore Banks was doing the right thing, Alan knew, and yet it felt as though they were abandoning their comrades. He felt a flicker of surprise as he realized just how much the Navy meant to him, despite everything. He'd been raised to believe that the Navy never abandoned its own. But there was no choice. The escort carriers couldn't hope to stand off a single alien carrier.
And the freighters don't have any stealth systems, Alan thought. We'll have to go doggo and deactivate the drives completely if we wanted to hide.
He shook his head grimly. The aliens had had plenty of time to get a solid lock on the convoy. There was no way the freighters could hide, not if the aliens came after them. The aliens might not know precisely where they were, but they'd certainly have no trouble calculating which volume of space to search. A freighter, even 40 freighters, was still tiny on an interplanetary scale. Yet they couldn't hide forever. A single emission would be more than enough to lead the aliens right to them.
Perhaps we should scatter, he thought.
Commodore Banks had probably made the right call in heading for Tramline 2 instead of Tramline 1, but they were still going to be far too close to the aliens for hours.
That might give some of the freighters a chance to escape. And doom any that get caught, his own thoughts answered. We'd have a better chance to fight if we stay together.
They won, Maddie said. Sir. Alan looked back at the display. The last human fleet carrier was nothing more than an expanding cloud of debris, while the remainder of the human starfighters were either falling back on New Russia or launching suicide attacks into the teeth of enemy firepower. They hadn't done anything wrong, as far as he could tell. The MNF had followed doctrine to the letter. But traditional doctrine had been written for a very different weapons mix. One where starfighters launched long-range strikes, while fleet carriers tried to stay out of the line of battle. They'd never anticipated being so heavily outgunned. He silently cursed the aliens under his breath. In hindsight, it was clear that they'd waited deliberately, holding their cards in reserve until humanity had assembled a force to challenge them. And then they'd pounced. Maddie stared at him, her eyes wide with horror.
Sir!
Alan wondered suddenly just who she'd seen die. Maddie might have known some of the dead too. Come to think of it, she might have better reason to believe that some of her former friends were dead. Alan could hope, at least, that none of the crewmen he'd known on Formidable had still been on the ship. It wasn't as if most starfighter pilots and starship officers stayed with a single ship for their entire career. If he recalled correctly, the average officer served on at least 4 ships.
Bring up the sensor records,
he ordered harshly. He couldn't afford to have Maddie go to pieces. Not now.
See if you can find something we can use.
Maddie gulped.
Aye, sir.
Alan nodded, then keyed his console. The aliens were concentrating on New Russia. Their starfighters were already heading towards the planet, without bothering to recharge and rearm. But it wouldn't be long before they started hunting the convoy. New Russia wasn't going anywhere, after all. He'd read a handful of vague articles about moving entire planets, but there'd never been anything more than theoretical studies. Dyson's fears were more practical, and it would be a very long time before humanity could construct a shell around a star. There was certainly no sign that the aliens possessed the technology to do anything of the sort. Bennett cleared his throat.
Did we get any of them?
Alan shrugged. Post-battle analysis would tell them, he supposed. But then the only thing they could count on were long-range sensor records. If Melbourne had drawn data from the in-system network, it hadn't been shared with Haddock. The time day alone would make it problematic. 100 alien starfighters might have been killed, and no one would know. It was certainly clear that no alien capital ships had been destroyed. He didn't think any of them had been so much as scratched.
We'll find out, he said.
On the display, the alien starfighters were tearing into New Russia's defense grid.
The orbital defenses had had some time to get over the shock and prepare, he noted. But it didn't look like it was going to be enough. The orbital network wasn't designed to cope with alien starfighters.
I wish.
He looked at the timer and swore out loud. 10 minutes. Barely even that, really. 10 minutes. 12 fleet carriers had died in less than 12 minutes. It had been the single most one-sided engagement in the Royal Navy's long history, worse even than the loss of Queen Elizabeth during the Second Falklands War. He couldn't even begin to calculate how many people had been killed. The two British carriers alone would have had over 3,000 souls on board, if one included the Royal Marines and Royal Engineers, unless they'd been offloaded before the engagement. Shit, he said quietly. The Russian defense grid had been brushed aside. What happens now? Bennett was watching the displays as the alien starships entered orbit, systematically dropping KEWs on anything that might be dangerous. They didn't have much to fear, Alan knew. Ground-based beam weapons didn't pose much of a threat to starships, while missiles would be easily tracked and intercepted as they boosted out of the atmosphere. New Russia was naked and helpless now. The forces on the ground utterly unable to keep the aliens from landing wherever they wanted. Alan had watched as the Royal Navy had pummeled a warlord-run state from orbit years ago, teaching the local barbarians not to mess with British citizens. The boot was on the other foot now. It would be very difficult for the Russians to muster any serious resistance to the alien invaders.
It depends, Bennett said, turning away from the displays. What do the aliens want?
Alan shrugged. He'd read all the speculations, or at least the ones the Royal Navy had considered creditable enough to forward to its officers. But none of them were based on anything beyond science fantasy and wild imaginations. Certainly, it was hard to take some of the suggestions seriously. The aliens might want to keep humanity from posing a long-term threat, but it was hard to believe that they actually wanted to eat humans. Or crossbreed with human women, for that matter. But human history showed a wide range of possible motives, as well as outcomes. It was quite possible that the aliens believed they had a right to humanity's planet. And convincing them otherwise might be difficult.
If they're unsure about the outcome, they'll probably leave the civilians alone, Bennett commented. They wouldn't want to give us any excuse to retaliate against their civilians if they lose the war. But that assumes they think like us.
Yeah, Alan said.
He shivered. He'd studied the Age of Unrest. Tinpot dictatorships and religious fanatics had often moved helpless civilians into danger zones, daring their enemies to slaughter innocents. It had worked once, when the war had been genteel. Years of increasingly bitter conflict and hatred had hardened attitudes and dehumanized enemy civilians. Surrounding a power station or military installation with human shields just meant a lot of dead civilians, none of whom had had a choice. By then, the war had been seen as total. It was a minor miracle that large swathes of the planet hadn't been depopulated.
And aliens might not even need to invent justifications for mass slaughter, he thought. If invasion and settlement is their goal, they might want to wipe New Russia clean of human life before landing their own colonists.
It'll be nasty, Bennett added.
Even for trained soldiers, it's not always possible to tell if something is a weapon or not. People can be shot just for pointing a fake gun at a soldier on guard. And aliens would be even less able to tell the difference between a friendly gesture and a threat.
Alan nodded curtly. The aliens seemed to be entering orbit. It didn't look as though they were landing troops, but there was no way to tell. It was quite possible that they'd been holding the occupation force on the far side of Tramline 4, just in case the battle went the other way. There was certainly no need to hurry. New Russia definitely wasn't going anywhere. He tried to imagine what it would be like when the aliens landed. Interstellar invasion had always been seen as difficult, if not outright impossible. Dominating a planet's high orbitals was easy, assuming one managed to capture them. But landing enough troops to occupy an entire planet? Alan didn't know how many Russians had military training, let alone weapons in private hands. Yet he found it hard to believe there were none. Besides, the Russian soldiers had probably left their bases before the KEW started raining down. They'd be hidden now, waiting for a chance to strike. A memory flashed into his mind and refused to fade. Years ago, he'd watched a movie with Judith. She'd been pregnant with Jeanette at the time, if he recalled correctly. They'd gone to a cinema and watched a chick flick about a pair of lovers during the Troubles, lovers who'd been separated during the mass roundups. He'd found it hard to be sorry for either of the characters. He was still surprised that the film had been made, let alone distributed. But now he thought he understood how they'd felt. Their country had been transformed overnight into a hostile environment, and they'd been torn apart by a war neither of them had chosen.
But we didn't choose this war either, he told himself. None of us did.
He keyed his console.
Herring squadron is to remain on alert status, he ordered shortly. Keeper squadron is to return to the ready room.
Not that we need to worry, he thought. Keeper's pilots will have more than enough time to get into their craft before Herring has finished vacating the launch tubes.
He forced himself to pull up the raw sensor data as the minutes slowly turned into hours and the convoy crawled away from New Russia. The analysts would check everything, of course, but he didn't have time to wait for the official reports. Gleaning something from the raw data might make the difference between life and death. Besides, there weren't many analysts attached to the convoy, if any. Melbourne wasn't large enough to have an analysis section of her own.
I think we did kill a handful of their starfighters,
Maddie said slowly.
But it's hard to be sure.
Alan looked up.
I hope you're right, he said. What have you found?
Maddie held out a data pad. Alan took it. He couldn't help noticing that there were dark circles around Maddie's eyes. She was young, but they'd been awake for hours before entering the system. He was tempted to order her to go back to her cabin. God knew she wasn't the only one who needed a rest. But he might need her.
A handful of sensor contacts vanished, Maddie told him,
as he scanned the pad.
There is at least a possibility that most of them were picked off by our starfighters.
Alan frowned.
But there's no way to be sure, he said.
He looked at the display. The gulf between the convoy and New Russia was growing wider by the second, but he had no illusions about just how easily the aliens could catch them if they wanted.
You can't prove it.
No, Maddie said. But my analysis is sound.
It's also what you want to believe, Alan said.
He tried not to see the crushed expression on her face.
We have to be careful that we don't make the mistake of seeing what we want to see.
He studied the rest of the analysis carefully. The aliens didn't seem to use their stealth systems very often, which was odd. On one hand, firing plasma cannons in all directions was the very opposite of stealthy. On the other hand, the aliens could definitely get into firing position before dropping their stealth and opening fire. Their starships had certainly managed to get very close to the planet before they'd been detected. Did the stealth system consume a great deal of power? It was possible, he supposed. Attempts to produce a cloaking device had failed, as far as he knew. And yet, someone might have made a workable version over the last few years. He wouldn't have been told about it, even if he hadn't been in jail.
I was never assigned to a top-secret research base, he thought. I wouldn't have had a need to know until the device entered the mainstream. It's a good piece of work, he said softly.
Maddie deserved some encouragement. She'd spotted a few things he'd missed. He felt a rush of affection, and he reminded himself again that she was his subordinate.
And I hope you're right.
The klaxons began to howl. Red icons flickered into life on the display.
Shit, he said. They found us!
Chapter 15. Abigail had been reprimanded, once, for dozing off while she'd been on duty, when she'd been a young girl on her first cruise. Her uncle had been very scathing about it, pointing out that the entire crew relied on the watch officer to keep her eyes open at all times. She'd never made that mistake again, as she'd climbed the ranks to captaincy. In hindsight, she'd even wondered if her uncle had been deliberately watching for her to make the mistake. It was something she'd needed to learn before she rose too high. Now she felt tired as the convoy crept towards Tramline 2, tired and worn. She'd sent half her crew to their bunks once it became clear they weren't in immediate danger, but she hadn't left the bridge herself. How could she? She was responsible for her ship and crew, even if she was playing at being a naval officer. But the stimulant she'd taken, when she'd realized just how long it was going to be before they finally jumped out of the system, was starting to wear off. And when it wore off completely, she knew all too well, she was going to crash hard. It was almost a relief when the aliens finally showed up. She jerked upright, adrenaline coursing through her system. Red icons were sparkling to life on the display, followed by convoy-wide alerts. Commodore Banks had ordered the convoy to maintain radio silence, but there was no point in being quiet now. The aliens had found them. There could be no mistake. Even as she watched, the enemy starfighters altered course to intercept the convoy.
"They didn't have a solid lock on us," she thought.
The aliens had been caught by surprise, if she was reading their trajectories correctly. They'd probably thought the convoy was somewhere else, and only caught a sniff of the real location by accident.
"And now they're moving into attack position. Call Anson back to the bridge," she ordered curtly.
He was the best helmsman on the ship, although she wouldn't tell him that for fear of boosting his ego. And besides, as much as she might want to let him sleep through the engagement, she knew he'd never forgive her if they survived.
"And then ready the weapons."
"Aye, Captain,"
Poddy said. She sounded nervous.
"Point defense weapons are coming online now."
Abigail frowned, eyeing the back of Poddy's head. Her daughter did sound nervous. If she panicked under fire. Abigail keyed her console, silently readying herself to take over Poddy's duties if necessary. She hated to even think of the possibility, but she knew it had to be acknowledged. She had been 17 when she had faced her first real emergency. Her console bleeped.
"Captain," Alan said, "I request permission to launch starfighters."
"Granted,"
Abigail said curtly. It was a meaningless formality now that Commodore Banks had ordered the convoy to go to battle stations. There was certainly nothing to be gained from keeping the starfighters in the launch tubes. The aliens had destroyed 12 fleet carriers in less than 10 minutes, and she was all too aware that Haddock was flimsy by comparison.
"Are you going to fly yourself?"
There was a brief hesitation.
"Both of my wing commanders will be out,"
Alan said, reluctantly.
"I have to stay inside."
Abigail felt her lips twitch in cold amusement. There were people on Earth who had sent Alan white feathers for refusing to put his life at risk, although anyone with half a brain would realize that Alan was at risk. Haddock wouldn't stand a chance if those plasma weapons started burning into her hull. Alan would have a better shot at survival if he was outside the ship. She snorted at the thought. Stupid ground pounders didn't realize that maintenance and logistics could be just as important as fighting.
"The aliens clearly understand," she thought, as Anson entered the bridge and sat down. "That's why they came after us."
She pushed the thought aside.
"Understood," she said.
She didn't have to worry about keeping derision out of her tone. Spacers understood the realities, even if ground pounders didn't.
"Tell your pilots I said good luck." "The flag is ordering us to pick up speed," Poddy said. "We're going to make a run for the tramline."
"As long as we stay in formation, we should be fine," Anson said.
"But if we get strung out..."
"I know the dangers," Abigail said.
"And so does the Commodore."
She turned her attention to the display and watched grimly as the starfighters were ejected into space. It was slow. too slow. The aliens didn't seem interested in giving them the time to get the starfighters out, either. Any purpose-built escort carrier would have to include more launch tubes, she noted absently. She promised herself that she'd bring the concept to the attention of the Belt Federation, if she made it home. Building fleet carriers was beyond them, but escorts might just be possible.
Particularly as we're at war, she thought. There won't be any objection from the great powers if we start cannoning up. Enemy craft will enter presumed engagement range in 2 minutes,
Proddy said. She sounded calmer now, thankfully.
22 minutes to the tramline.
Anson snorted.
How long did it take them to tear apart 12 fleet carriers?
That will do,
Abigail snapped, although she'd been thinking the same thing herself.
Do they have any capital ships within detection range?
Not as far as I can tell,
Poddy said.
But that means nothing.
Abigail nodded grimly. Commodore Banks had launched a shell of recon drones and long-range probes, but all they were picking up were enemy starfighters. And yet those starfighters had to have a mothership somewhere close by. Unless, she supposed, they had far more endurance than their human counterparts. It was vaguely possible. There was no way to guess what other surprises the aliens might have up their sleeves.
They might not even wear sleeves,
the irreverent part of her mind pointed out. She studied the sensor readings as the final seconds ticked away. The alien starfighters appeared to be slightly larger than humanity's, although they also seemed to be more maneuverable. It was difficult to be certain, but it looked as though the point defense sensors would have no difficulty telling the two sides apart. The aliens weren't using their stealth systems either, which meant what? She had no difficulty in believing the system was a power hog, but she couldn't help feeling as though that was too good to be true.
The aliens are engaging the first squadrons now,
Poddy said. A handful of icons vanished from the display. Abigail heard a note of pain in Poddy's voice and winced. She'd told Poddy not to spend too much time with the starfighter pilots, but Poddy hadn't been able to avoid getting to know some of them. A couple of her friends might be dead now. At least they'd taken out a pair of aliens, too. It was clear that some of the wilder speculations, force fields at least, were not grounded in reality.
Which is lucky for us, she told herself,
as the alien starfighters broke through the defenders and roared down on the convoy.
They already have too many advantages.
They're coming right at us,
Poddy said. Her voice rose sharply.
The CSB is moving to intercept. Open fire the moment they enter the kill zone,
Abigail ordered. She doubted the CSP could stop the aliens, not before they engaged Haddock. The point defense would have to shoot first and ask questions later. Thankfully, the starfighter pilots understood the danger of straying into the kill zone themselves. This time, there would be no incidents.
We'll give them a beating!
She tensed as the aliens swept into engagement range, blowing through the CSP with a grim determination she could only admire. The point defense opened fire a second later, blasting two of the alien starfighters into dust. Abigail felt her heart leap, an instant before one of the alien craft opened fire. Alarms sounded as plasma bolts plunged into her ship.
Direct hit! Lower holds!
Poddy said. The alarms went quiet, so abruptly that silence fell like a hammer.
I think they took out one of the launch tubes. And all the starfighters are already out,
Abigail thought. The aliens presumably didn't know it, but switching out the damaged launch tube and replacing it wouldn't take more than a few hours. If, of course, they made it back home.
We won't be so lucky next time. Seal off that section,
she ordered.
We'll try to make repairs once we're through the tramline.
The remaining alien craft broke and fled. Abigail frowned, trying to figure out what they were doing. Another pass would have destroyed her ship. Hell, all they'd have to do was shoot out the drives if they wanted to render her dead in space. The freighter might survive that sort of treatment, but she'd be good for nothing more than scrap afterwards. And then she saw the aliens regrouping, altering course towards...
They're targeting Melbourne.
Poddy breathed. Anson didn't look up from his console as the aliens began their attack run.
We have to do something!
Abigail shook her head. There was nothing they could do. The convoy CSP was already moving to intercept, but she doubted they could keep the aliens from breaking through and falling on the cruiser. Their tactics did make sense, she supposed, as the aliens started tearing Melbourne apart. It took longer, much longer, to produce a warship than a freighter. A clear shot at a cruiser was not to be missed. And killing the convoy CO was just the icing on the cake.
She's gone,
Poddy said.
Keep us on our current course,
Abigail ordered. The aliens were already regrouping. Of course they were. There were other warships, real as well as makeshift, to be killed.
Once we're over the tramline, we can go silent again.
She studied the empty display. She knew the aliens had to have a mothership out there somewhere. A mothership that could presumably cross the tramlines too. The pursuit would not be long delayed, if it was delayed at all. And yet, she glared at the barren reaches of interplanetary space. Neither her sensors nor the recon drones could pick up much of anything.
They'll have to pick up their starfighters first, she told herself.
She knew that wouldn't slow the aliens down much, if at all. A fleet carrier could recover all of her starfighters with terrifying speed.
And then they'll come right after us. Captain Hyatt has assumed command,
Poddy reported.
He's ordering us to keep going.
Very good,
Abigail said dryly. The aliens were moving back into attack formation now, isolating their targets one by one.
It isn't as if we have anywhere else to go.
Alan felt sweat trickling down his back as he tried to make sense out of the chaos. The alien attack patterns made sense, yet they didn't make sense. They'd attacked Haddock and two other escort carriers briefly. They moved to attack the genuine warships instead of the freighters or escort carriers. Perhaps they were more interested in wiping out the remainder of the MNF than anything else.
Herring 9 is gone, sir,
Maddie said.
There's no sign she ejected.
Understood, Alan said. He felt a pang of bitter regret. Herring 9, Flight Lieutenant Sophia Augusta. A fun-loving young woman who'd been transferred when she'd been caught having an affair with one of her wingmates. She'd been good enough, barely, not to be discharged on the spot. And now she was dead. He told himself firmly that he'd mourn later. Right now, he had to concentrate on the engagement. The aliens pushed the offensive hard, systematically wiping out the remaining warships one by one. It cost them, but it didn't cost them enough. Trading a handful of starfighters for a single frigate was a winning equation, even if it was hard on the starfighter pilots. Alan had no idea what sort of intelligence was directing the aliens, but he thought he understood its logic. The aliens were quite happy to spend starfighters to kill capital ships.
We'd do it too, he thought,
as HMCS Seaford exploded into fire. Captain Hyatt was dead, bare minutes after assuming command.
But they're using our own logic against us.
They're swinging around to target us,
Maddie reported.
Two more squadrons are closing in on the other escorts.
Let the point defense handle them,
Alan ordered. There was no point in trying to micromanage, not now. His subordinates knew what to do.
Is there still no sign of their starships?
No, sir,
Maddie said. Alan forced himself to think carefully. The aliens clearly hadn't known precisely where the convoy was, forcing them to send out recon squadrons to locate the human ships before whistling up something stronger to destroy them. But they'd definitely found their targets now, which meant either there was a fleet carrier somewhere nearby, or the aliens were operating right on the edge of their endurance.
Or we might simply have underestimated their endurance, he thought sourly. The aliens might be able to endure much longer flights. And fights.
The ship shuddered.
Direct hit! Port armor!
Maddie said.
I...
She broke off.
Red Wedding is gone,
she added sharply, as another icon vanished from the display.
They just blew right through her.
Alan winced. An escort carrier and her crew. Just gone. It was nothing compared to the sheer number of lives already lost, but he told himself again that they'd mourn later, once they were safe. They were nearing the tramline. If no enemy capital ship showed up, at least some of the freighters would be safe.
Point defense network has been updated,
Maddie told him.
I think we've got a better chance at hitting the bastards now.
Yeah, Alan said. On the display, a freighter died in fire. The bastards hadn't even tried to disable the ship. But they're still hitting us. He cursed the aliens under his breath. A human starfighter would have to be very lucky to inflict serious damage on a fleet carrier with flechette guns. But the aliens didn't seem to have that limitation. They certainly didn't have to fly back to their carriers to reload after launching their torpedoes. They didn't have torpedoes. They didn't need them.
Make sure you make every shot count, he ordered,
although he knew it was impossible to save their pellets. The aliens had another advantage there, as much as he hated to admit it. Sooner or later, Haddock would shoot herself dry, and then she'd be utterly defenseless against even a single alien starfighter.
And make sure the CSP knows too.
They know, sir,
Maddie said.
They know. They just caught us a glancing blow,
Poddy reported.
Minor damage, but the hull is breached.
Minor damage? Abigail repeated, sardonically. Haddock was designed to seal off any compartments that were suddenly exposed to vacuum. But with her ship taking a pounding, it was hard to be sure the safety precautions would actually take effect. Losing her entire ship to a single hull breach would be embarrassing. Although right now, it was actually the least of her worries.
Time to tramline.
5 minutes,
Anson said.
As long as the drive holds out, we'll make it.
Abigail winced. City of Truro, a workhorse-class freighter that might have been earmarked for later conversion into an escort carrier, had suffered a major drive failure and fallen out of formation. She'd hoped, and hated herself for hoping, that destroying a disabled ship would keep the aliens from taking out more ships. But the aliens had swept past the wounded vessel, no doubt marking her down for later attention. Abigail didn't know the vessel's commander, but she was sure he didn't deserve to be stuck in an occupied system. The aliens would have no trouble picking him up afterwards and dumping the crew into a POW camp.
If they bother to set up POW camps, Abigail thought.
The great powers rarely bothered to take prisoners these days. She'd heard the horror stories. The Geneva Conventions had fallen by the wayside long ago.
They might just exterminate the ship and crew. They're coming back at us,
Poddy reported.
The CSP is badly weakened.
Keep us going,
Abigail ordered.
And prepare to recover fighters.
The aliens attacked viciously, as if they sensed there wouldn't be another chance. Abigail watched two more ships die, a third losing power and falling out of formation. And then the first freighters reached the tramline and vanished.
Start recovering starfighters, she ordered.
Negative,
Alan said over the intercom.
Have them armed on the hull.
Abigail winced. She should have thought of that. They didn't have time to recover the starfighters. Not on this side of the tramline. The aliens were pushing them hard. Once they realized the starfighters were being recovered, they'd do everything in their power to disrupt the process. And she'd have to decide between leaving people behind or risking the rest of her crew.
Do it,
she ordered.
And jump us out the moment we have everyone on board.
She keyed the console, looking back at New Russia. There was no sign of the aliens, not at this distance. But she knew they were there. They'd sweep the system, destroying facilities and occupying asteroid settlements, if they didn't simply destroy them. Maybe the aliens were too advanced to need asteroid mining stations. Or maybe... An instant later, the display blanked. Her stomach heaved.
Jump completed, Captain,
Anson reported. He sounded woozy. Jumping at speed felt like being punched in the gut.
We're clear. For the moment,
Abigail thought.
But what happens when they come after us?
Chapter 16. There was nothing particularly interesting about the Kiev system. A Russian survey ship had visited the system over a century ago, but a brief survey hadn't turned up anything worthy of later attention. There was nothing in the system, save for a single gas giant and an asteroid cluster that might, once upon a time, have been a planet. The Russians had formally claimed the system, but apart from using the tram lines, they hadn't actually done very much with it. There was no point in expending resources on settling Kiev, when New Russia was just one tramline away. The only installation in the system was a refueling station orbiting the gas giant.
We appear to be clear, sir,
Maddie said. Alan nodded, tiredly. Assuming an alien fleet carrier had been lurking out of sensor range, assuming... He shook his head. There were too many assumptions. Too many things he simply didn't know for sure. Right now, Haddock and her remaining comrades were in no state for a battle. If the aliens came after them, they were dead. Get the fighters inside, he ordered. He glanced at the latest update and winced. Only 15 pilots had survived the brief but brutal engagement. 9 of his pilots were dead, blown to dust. So many others were also dead that their deaths might have passed unnoticed. And tell the pilots to go straight to bed. He glanced at Bennett. Who's in command now? Good question, Bennett said. He studied the display for a long moment. Is there any senior military officer left alive? Alan gritted his teeth. The warships were gone, leaving 4 escort carriers and 30 freighters, none of which were in any state for a fight. He honestly wasn't sure who was in command now. Technically, it should be the captain with the longest time in grade, but the Belters might have different ideas. Perhaps Abigail would assume command. He wondered, absently, if he should encourage her to do it. But right now, there was a more important problem. He keyed his console. We need to run silent. The moment we have all the starfighters on board, he said. Make sure everyone knows that a single leak could kill us.
I'll see to it, Abigail said.
She sounded as tired as he felt.
And I'll check our remaining supplies. See what can be shared.
Good thinking, Alan said. He should have thought of that, but it had slipped his mind. They didn't have time to swap spare parts and ammunition around now. Not unless they wanted to remain close to the tramline, which would just get them killed when the aliens finally crossed. But they'd have to do it later. See if anyone has a recon probe, too. We might need it. He closed the connection and sat back in his chair. Maddie, go get some rest, he ordered, once the starfighters were all back on board. I'll call you if you're needed. Maddie didn't argue. That, more than anything else, proved that she was reaching the limits of her endurance. Instead, she stood and walked through the hatch. Alan resisted the urge to watch her go. Instead, he turned his attention to the display as the convoy slowly started to move. If his calculations were correct, they should have a reasonable chance of remaining hidden if they managed to get well away from the tramline. A dogleg course would add days to their journey home. But there was no choice. The aliens would expect them to take a least time course to the next tramline. Unless they're planning to drive on Earth instead, Alan thought. Should we be trying to warn them? He stared down at his hands.
Doctrine insisted that all fleet deployments should be quietly monitored by picket ships, a precaution that everyone had ridiculed when he had been on the command track.
It didn't look so stupid now. Surely someone would have watched the battle, then hurried back to Earth. He tapped the console, bringing up the star chart and running through the calculations. Assuming they didn't encounter the aliens for a second and final time, another assumption he knew better than to take for granted, it would take at least 5 weeks to get back home. The aliens would have plenty of time to stomp Earth flat by the time the convoy arrived.
And there's no way to speed it up, he told himself.
None of the freighters were particularly fast. He could shave a day or two off if he tried, but not much more. The only way to really cut it down was to go back to New Russia, which ran the risk of being intercepted.
We can't warn them to prepare for hell.
He looked at Bennett.
There would have been a picket ship, right?
Perhaps, Bennett said.
He didn't look tired, the bastard. Alan was starting to wonder if he was actually the product of a top-secret genetic enhancement project. Or maybe he just had some really neat modifications spliced into his DNA.
But we don't know.
No,
Alan agreed.
We don't.
He rose.
Get some sleep yourself,
he ordered, as the convoy kept moving away from the tram line. They should be safe now, as long as they were careful. At the very least, they'd have some warning before the aliens jumped them.
I'll get some sleep, too.
Make sure someone is keeping an eye on the sensors, Bennett advised, and don't take anything to go to sleep.
Alan nodded tartly. Somehow, he doubted he needed it. He walked through the corridors, trying to ignore the faint smell of ozone in the air, and Bennett's constant presence behind him. He'd been more than a little resentful at first, when he'd been sentenced to prison, even though he knew, on some level, that he deserved it. God knew he'd murdered his wife, throwing away both his career and his freedom in a single moment of naked violence. And yet, he'd never resented the Navy. It had been his home, his tribe. The Navy might have rejected him, but he'd never returned the favor. He was a Navy man. He shuddered helplessly. 12 fleet carriers, the strongest ships humanity had produced, had been blown away in less than 10 minutes. Compared to them, the other warships barely merited being mentioned in dispatches. He couldn't think of anything that could be done to safeguard the remainder of the Navy from alien weapons. Bolting heavy armor to the hulls, perhaps. It might work, if the crews worked fast. Perhaps the aliens simply hadn't understood just how well their weapons would work on human hulls. They sure as hell knew now.
And they'll punch right at Earth. While we're still trying to adapt, he thought. And that will be the end of the war.
The hatch hissed open. He didn't bother with a shower. He just took off his shoes and climbed into the bunk. His thoughts haunted him as he closed his eyes. What would they find when they got home? A destroyed navy and a world swept clean of life? Or what?
And yet, we have to go home, he told himself. We can't go elsewhere.
He was tired, but it was a long time before he could sleep.
Those weapons were hot, Captain, Dracopoulos said.
The chief engineer looked as tired as Abigail felt.
They burned right through the hull.
We're damn lucky they didn't hit anything explosive, or we wouldn't be here right now.
That's probably what killed the carriers,
Abigail said. She'd managed to snatch a few quick hours of sleep, but her body was loudly insisting that she hadn't slept at all.
Did you find the bodies?
We pulled the remains of Rating Acuna out of the lower bay, Dracopoulos said. Rating Wayland remains unaccounted for.
May the stars protect him,
Abigail said.
He deserved better, didn't he?
She shivered as a thought struck her. Wayland had been wearing his shipsuit. If he'd been swept into space when the lower bay decompressed, which seemed the most likely scenario, he might have survived long enough to know his body would be lost forever. She'd studied the records, of course, in the hopes of finding his body one day, but she knew success was unlikely.
He deserved much better, Dracopoulos agreed. And so did the others.
He held up a datapad.
I've been in touch with the other engineers, he told her. We do have a list of spare parts we need to swap, so I'd like to start transfer flights as soon as possible. Once we have the parts on board, we can start work at once.
Once we're well away from the aliens, Abigail said. She glanced at her wristcom, silently calculating the vectors. They should be safe now, but there were too many question marks surrounding the aliens for her to be sure of anything. For all she knew, they were being tracked right now.
Can we survive without the spare parts?
Probably, Dracopoulos said. But we did lose a handful of computer nodes. Fortunately, the remainder of the system compensated.
He paused.
I can have the lower bay repressurized in an hour, he added. It's the only place big enough to gather the entire crew.
Good thinking,
Abigail said. Belter custom demanded that the dead be honored as soon as possible. And that went for the starfighter pilots, too. They deserved to be honored, even if they weren't Belters. Their deaths might just have saved the ship.
We'll hold the funeral in 2 hours.
But no wake, Dracopoulos said. I could put together a still.
No,
Abigail said flatly. She felt a pang of bitter guilt, which she ruthlessly pushed aside. Getting her cag drunk might not be illegal, but it had been stupid.
We are not getting drunk in the middle of a war zone.
She nodded to him, then started to walk through the ship. The damage was fairly minor in the grand scheme of things, but it shook her more than she cared to admit. She knew intellectually that the ship was far from invulnerable, yet it was still a shock to see damage to the hull. The grim knowledge that they'd been very lucky not to be ripped apart by alien fire didn't help. Thankfully, the aliens hadn't known precisely where to place their shots. Taking out the bridge would have been utterly disastrous.
It could have been worse, she told herself. But it could have been better, too.
Alan led the way into the lower hull and stepped to one side, allowing his surviving starfighter pilots and support crew to find places amidst the civilians. Someone had been busy. After patching the hull, the engineers had stuck a handful of pictures to the wall, each one representing a crewman who had died in the brief, savage engagement. He wasn't sure how he felt about the starfighter pilots being included, although...
Stop that, he told himself sharply. They're trying to honor all the dead.
Abigail stepped up to the front of the room and turned to face the crowd. Alan watched her as the chamber fell quiet, then glanced behind him. Everyone was in the chamber, save for a skeleton crew. He couldn't keep himself from hoping that the hull patches would hold, at least long enough for the service to be finished. If the hull broke open again, everyone in the chamber would be dead, if they didn't manage to get their ship suits on in time. And even if they did, survival would be challenging. Alan doubted many would make it.
It isn't going to happen, he told himself. Relax.
Death is a part of life,
Abigail said. Her voice was very clear.
We who live beside the vacuum know this for a fact. Death stalks us every day, waiting for the moment when our lives come to an end. And we accept this to be true. Because death cannot be evaded permanently. We do not fear death, for death is a part of life. Instead, we strive to accomplish something with our lives before our time runs out, something that our families and friends will remember when we are gone. Today, we gather to honor our comrades who died so that we may live. 17 people on this ship were killed in the battle, all members of our crew. Their deaths will not be forgotten. We will remember them as long as life itself endures.
She paused.
It is customary for the captain to speak briefly about each of the dead, but time is not on our side, she added. And so I will speak of 2, and Wing Commander Mark Savage will speak of 3. We ask your forgiveness and that of the dead for cutting the service short. The others will be remembered when we return home.
If we return home, Alan thought.
The system was quiet, as far as their sensors could determine, but that meant nothing. The alien stealth systems were too good.
It was quite possible that the aliens were already closing in.
We may never see Earth again.
Rating Akuna Yu was young, yet she had an inborn engineering talent that only needed a little direction to flourish into light. I saw something in her when she applied to join the crew that could become something great. And so I allowed her to join. In the 2 years she was with us, she was beloved by everyone, credited for squeezing a little more power out of the drives. She will be sorely missed. Rating Wayland was older, yet he was young at heart. He told me once that he never intended to rise in the ranks. He merely wanted to see the universe, and serving on a freighter seemed a good way to do it. Perhaps he was right, too. In his time as a spacer, he saw more planets and star systems than anyone else, even me. I often wondered why he didn't apply for survey work instead of freighters, but he never answered. Perhaps he was happy where he was. He made us happy, too. His body has not been recovered. We cannot take his ashes home, nor can we launch him into space. And yet, I pledge he will not be forgotten. None of them will be forgotten.
No, Alan promised himself. None of them will be forgotten. She looked at Savage, who stepped forward.
I wish there was time to speak of everyone, he said. 15 starfighter pilots died, 7 of them under my command. But I can only speak of one, Flight Lieutenant Sophia Augusta. He took a long breath. Sophia was a wild young woman at heart. She was a thrill seeker, willing to do anything for a dare. She confided in me once that she'd come very close to being expelled from her school after a streaking prank resulted in great embarrassment for her teachers. Thankfully, she was introduced to starfighters, where being willing to risk everything is considered an advantage. Alan winced. That hurt, more than he cared to admit.
There was nothing bad about her, Savage said. She was not malicious. She wanted to live life to the fullest, not torment others. She could laugh at herself rather than laugh at others. I liked her. We all liked her. And while she did deserve a severe reprimand for her conduct on her last posting, she didn't deserve to die. I like to think that she's laughing at us, and herself, from beyond the stars. I wish I'd known her for longer. I wish I'd known the others for longer. But what I know of her will be remembered.
It will,
Alan promised himself.
He wished he'd known Sophia Augusta better, too.
And so will all of the others who died in the battle.
Abigail looked at him.
Alan, would you like to say a few words?
No, Alan thought, but there are some things that have to be said.
I promised you that I wouldn't bullshit you when we first met, he said.
He'd said that to the starfighter pilots, but he thought the rest of the crew would understand.
We have just watched helplessly as thousands of people, some of them our friends and family, were blown away by our new foe. It won't be long before they resume their advance on Earth. And if they take Earth, or even devastate the system, the war will be over. This is a war for survival. A war waged against a race that seems to think the galaxy isn't big enough for both of us. This is not a little border skirmish or a struggle with religious fanatics. Not even a war between great powers. This is going to be worse than any war humanity has ever fought. The loss of 12 entire fleet carriers may be only the beginning. It will get worse. Our very existence as a species is under threat. I wish I had some comfort to offer. I wish I could promise you victory. But all I can say is that we will continue to fight. We will do everything in our power to hold the line until we can teach these bastards that humanity will never give up. We will fight, we will win, and we will make them pay for what they've done. Remember the dead, and avenge them.
He stepped back. Abigail spoke a few brief words. Alan barely heard them, and then dismissed the crew. Alan started to follow them, tiredly. He wanted more sleep. He thought they all wanted more sleep, but there was no time. They had to get the ships repaired before the aliens showed up. They had to.
And if they catch up with us after the repairs, he thought numbly, they'll kill us anyway.
Abigail caught his arm.
A word with you, she said. Now.
Chapter 17. Abigail's cabin hadn't changed, Alan noted, as he followed her into her private compartment. Of course it hadn't changed. It was still cramped, despite being the largest cabin on the ship. A datapad sat on the table, blinking for attention. The hatch hissed closed as Abigail pointed him to the chair, her movements less graceful, now they were alone. He couldn't help wondering what was bothering her.
Sit,
Abigail ordered, when he made no move to sit down. She softened her tone, just slightly.
Please?
Alan sat and watched, with growing alarm, as she pulled a box out of a compartment and opened it to reveal a bottle of dark red liquid. The bottle was unmarked, something would not have passed muster on Earth. There was no list of ingredients or warnings about alcohol content, let alone snide notes about drunkards still being responsible for anything they did while under the influence. He'd always found them infuriating as a young man, although he supposed the warnings did make a certain kind of sense. A man who drank and then did something stupid would not be able to use drunkenness as an excuse when he was hauled up before the magistrate.
There are glasses in the compartment under your butt, Abigail said.
She sounded angry, although her anger wasn't directed at him.
Take out a couple, would you?
Alan hesitated, torn between doing as he was told and walking out. Abigail had given him alcohol before, and the results had not been good. And he was supposed to set an example for the other pilots. God knew they'd think less of him if they found him wandering the ship in a drunken state, tunelessly singing the 9 verses of Merlin the Happy Pig. But at the same time, part of him wanted to drown his sorrows. He'd watched 12 fleet carriers die in less than 10 minutes. The war had taken a very nasty turn. He reached under the chair, opened the compartment, and produced 2 shot glasses. Abigail sniffed when she saw them. There were bigger glasses too, but took them without comment, pouring a splash of wine into each glass. Alan frowned as she passed him a glass, lifting hers to her lips. The smell was strong enough to bother him. He couldn't help wondering if the 2-pint rule should be replaced by the 1-shot rule.
Absent friends, Abigail said.
She looked down at the liquid for a long moment.
Cheers.
She drank. Alan drank too, carefully. The wine tasted strong, as if it had been left to ferment for too long. He wondered, as he put the empty glass down on the table, just how much alcohol he'd drunk. Shipboard rotgut was normally not made with scientific precision. It could be anything from mildly fermented grape juice to something so strong that a sniff of the liquid would make his head spin. No one had actually been poisoned by rotgut, as far as he knew, but that didn't mean the wine wasn't strong. His superiors on Formidable would not have been amused if he had turned up for duty drunk out of his mind. He shuddered as it hit him again. Formidable was gone. The carrier had seemed invincible, utterly untouchable by modern weapons. But the aliens had changed the rules, and Formidable had died. And Abigail held up the bottle.
Another?
Alan shook his head.
No, thank you, he said. We have to keep a clear head.
It's a little late for that,
Abigail said. She put the bottle back in the box and returned it to the compartment.
She was a pretty young girl, you know.
Akuna.
Yeah,
Abigail said.
She could have gone far, if she'd lived. The Belt doesn't care about tangled family trees, does it? All that matters is competence and ability, and she had those, in spades. I knew she wouldn't stay with us forever, but I didn't care. I liked her more than I should.
She looked at him sharply.
Does it ever get easier?
Alan shook his head.
No, he said.
Men and women had died under his command. They'd died in training accidents, not wartime, but it didn't make it any easier. He knew accidents happened. He knew the Board of Inquiry had determined that the accidents hadn't been his fault. Yet he kept thinking that there was something he could have done.
The pain dulls, but it never goes away.
She wasn't military,
Abigail said. She sounded as though she hadn't heard a word he'd said.
I should have kicked her off the ship when we were told that we were going to become an escort carrier. God knows it wouldn't have been held against her. She could have gone back to the Belt and become a research scientist or something. Not stayed with us and flown into danger. I could have saved her life.
You didn't know,
Alan said quietly. He sighed inwardly. He'd been told not to get too attached to his pilots, but that was impossible. When he'd been a starfighter pilot himself, he'd shared in the camaraderie. When he'd been CAG, he still hadn't been able to distance himself from the younger men and women. Hell, it was worse on Haddock. He'd had 24 pilots under his command, not 300. He'd gotten to know them better than he should.
I should have known, Abigail said. She was barely 3 years older than Poddy. I shouldn't have let her come with us.
And the ship's crew is too small for Abigail to detach herself from her subordinates, Alan thought. Acuna might not have been her biological daughter, but Abigail thought of her as a child. She made her choice, Alan said, unsure what to say. It was what she wanted.
She didn't know what she wanted, Abigail snapped. Is it so easy for you to dismiss her death?
No, Alan said. He honestly didn't know what to say. But she knew the risks.
Abigail snorted.
Huh. We all know the common risks, she said bitterly. A war is a little different, isn't it?
Yeah, Alan said. It is.
He looked down at the metal deck, trying to think of something he could say. But nothing came to mind. He had known, he'd always known, that everyone who joined the Royal Navy was a volunteer. The Navy didn't take conscripts. Even the Army didn't take conscripts, although that might change in a hurry. The last conscriptions had been nearly a century ago, but the legislation remained on the books. He had no doubt the government would reintroduce conscription as soon as it dawned on the politicians that the Navy might not be able to keep the aliens from landing on Earth.
And we might not be able to resist if they did, he thought.
He wished, suddenly, for another drink.
As long as they control the high orbitals, we'd have no hope of driving them off our world.
He shuddered. He knew enough about counterinsurgency tactics to understand that the aliens would have little trouble defending their positions. If, of course, they didn't simply exterminate the human race. Wiping out every population center was the work of an afternoon, if they wanted Earth for themselves. Or they could drop a genetically engineered virus once they'd captured the high orbitals. That particular demon had nearly escaped the bottle before the great powers had managed to slam the lid into place and weld it shut. And it had been humans who'd created the first tailored virus.
How can we blame the aliens for being inhuman, he thought, when man is so inhuman to man?
People have died before, Abigail said. I killed a man who thought I'd be an easy target. He dragged me into a cabin. I drew my gun and shot him. I didn't feel anything as I watched him die. It didn't really shock me.
She looked at her empty glass.
He deserved it. I had a gun. Didn't he think I knew how to use it? And my uncle died because he made a careless but understandable mistake. I mourned him, yet
His death was understandable. He pushed the life support too far, you see. It caught up with him eventually. But Akuna died in the middle of an incomprehensible war. Why does it bother me so much?
She did nothing to deserve it,
Alan said quietly.
No, she didn't,
Abigail said. She looked up at him sharply.
Did your wife do anything to deserve it?
Alan felt a hot flash of anger, mingled with bitterness. The pain had dulled in time. Colchester had helped, if only by forcing him to keep a steady routine. And yet he was torn between self-justification and the grim knowledge that he deserved far worse. He'd been very lucky not to be marched into the execution chamber and hanged. If Judith hadn't been cheating on him.
But if Judith hadn't been cheating on me, he thought, I would never have killed her.
I don't know, he said finally. His feelings were awash.
I don't know what she deserved.
Alan studied his hands for a long moment, unwilling to meet her gaze.
I thought she loved me, he said. I thought we were building a family. I was sending her enough money to ensure that we'd have a comfortable life once I retired. I wouldn't have any problems finding a job afterwards, if I wished. Military vets get preference almost everywhere. 5 more years.
He swore as it dawned on him. If she hadn't cheated on him, if he hadn't caught her, he would have retired before the war. He'd never really expected to command his own starship, not when there were more potential captains with better connections than there were commands. He might have had a shot at XO, or wound up spending the last 2 years flying a desk. But command would have been beyond him, and he wouldn't have waited around either. He'd always intended to retire when his daughters started secondary school. God knew they'd need a father in their lives then.
And now they don't have anyone but their grandparents, he thought.
Hot tears prickled at the corner of his eyes.
Who'll keep a sharp eye on them then?
You killed her, Abigail said.
Her voice was very hard.
You made the choice to kill her.
Alan sighed. He didn't know. Everything was a blur from the moment he'd walked into the house until the police arrested him. Flashes of memory, images of Judith screaming and... He shook his head. He didn't want to remember. Even thinking about losing control so badly scared him. He'd loved her. And yet...
I know what I did, Alan said.
The first clear memory was being interrogated by the police, his hands cuffed to the table as they fired questions at him. There had been blood on his hands. Judith's blood.
And yet I don't know what choice I made.
He gritted his teeth. A woman who cheated on her husband could expect nothing after the divorce. And that went double for a wife who cheated on a military husband. She might get custody of the children, but even that came with a steep price. Hell, she'd be lucky not to be charged with demoralizing the troops. Who would want to go to war and accept a long separation from his wife and children if he thought there was a chance his wife would cheat on him?
No one, he thought. The day of the Dear John letter is long gone.
It wasn't fair, he told himself. Judith could have gotten a divorce at any moment if she'd been willing to pay the price. No one would have forced her to stay in the marriage if she'd been unhappy. They could have sat down like adults and discussed custody and visitation rights in a calm and reasonable manner. He'd loved her, but he would have let her go if she'd wanted to go. Instead, she'd had her fling, and he'd killed her.
Everyone makes choices, Abigail said. They just have to learn to deal with the consequences.
Alan felt his temper flare.
You could have handed the ship over to some other captain, he said tartly.
The days when the Royal Navy had more captains than ships were long gone too. But the Navy wouldn't have had any problems digging up a CO for an escort carrier if necessary.
You didn't have to stay in command.
This is my ship, Abigail snapped back. I am in command, not some numbnut from Earth. who doesn't understand how to handle a freighter crew. We're not soldiers, you know.
But you're still going into a war zone, Alan pointed out. You knew the ship might be attacked.
I knew that, Abigail said. But that doesn't make it any easier.
She glared at him.
Did you kill your wife because you were used to losing people?
Alan clenched his fists.
No, he said. I...
Did you not care about the dead?
Abigail pressed.
Or a young woman is dead?
I know,
Alan shouted. He fought to control his growing anger.
I know she's dead, and her death is a tragedy, and nothing I can do will bring her back, and... I can't bring her back!
He sagged, unclenching his fists.
It won't get any easier, he said. You'll just get better at handling it. Or you can hand the ship over to someone else, he added silently. If the Navy lets you go.
Ha!
Abigail said. She laughed humorlessly.
We're a ship of the damned, aren't we?
No,
Alan said.
You murdered your wife,
Abigail said.
And for some strange reason, you were allowed to live until they found a use for you. What shitty people you groundbounders are, to be sure!
She laughed again.
What did your ugly friend do?
Alan gaped at her, then started to laugh himself. Bennett? She thought Bennett was a convict too. His laugh turned into hysterical giggles as he realized that they'd never actually told her that Bennett was his watchdog. God only knew what she'd been thinking. A serious criminal would have been executed, or at least exiled, but that still left plenty of room for all sorts of misbehavior. For all she knew, Bennett had murdered his wife too.
He didn't do anything, Alan said.
It was hard, so hard, to keep from breaking into another fit of giggles.
He's there to make sure I don't do anything.
Oh,
Abigail said. She looked at him, then chuckled.
That must be annoying.
You have no idea, Alan said.
He didn't really blame the Royal Navy for wanting to keep an eye on him. But Bennett's constant presence was more than a little irritating, even if they had managed to form a working relationship.
He does have his uses.
I'm glad to hear it,
Abigail said.
But...
She looked down grimly.
But... All those ships were destroyed. What happens now?
I don't know,
Alan said. He felt numb. If the aliens could wipe out 12 fleet carriers so casually, what was to keep them from smashing the rest of the Royal Navy? And every other navy? The war might be over by the end of the month.
I just don't know.
And we won't know until we get back home,
Abigail said. She shifted until they were facing each other, their legs almost touching.
All we can do is pray.
She leaned forward. Alan wasn't sure afterwards which of them actually kissed the other first. He was surprised at himself, surprised at her too. Their lips met, pressing together in a manner that had nothing to do with love and affection, but an urge to do something, anything, to remind them that they were still human. He drew back just for a second as his heart started to pound. Her eyes were hard, yet desperate. And then she kissed him again. His body took over, his hands pulling her upright and scrabbling with her shipsuit. It had been too long, far too long, since he'd been with a woman. He couldn't keep himself from reaching up to stroke her breasts, feeling her hard nipples under his fingers. Her hands roamed his body too, unbuckling his suit and pushing his trousers down. She pushed him against the bulkhead, kissing him time and time again, as he entered her. It crossed his mind as he started to move inside her that it was a mistake. They shouldn't be having sex, not when they were meant to work together. But it had been so long. He heard her gasping deep in her throat as he fucked her harder and harder. She moved too, her hands gripping his buttocks and encouraging him to move faster. He wasn't sure which of them was in charge. Perhaps they were just being driven by their hormones, by the need to forget, just for a while, the death and destruction. He came hard. His legs buckled. And yet, part of him felt as though he'd betrayed his wife. God knew he'd had sexual partners before getting married, but God also knew he'd never had anyone else since the day he'd sworn himself to her. His fellow pilots had teased him for not taking advantage of shore leave, yet he'd thought the marriage meant something. And there had been no women after Judith's death. "I'm sorry," he thought, although he wasn't sure if he was sorry. Judith had cheated on him, after all, and she hadn't even had the decency to tell him. And then he met Abigail's eyes and knew they'd made a terrible mistake. Chapter 18.
Fuck,
Abigail thought. She was dazed, her mind unable to form a coherent thought as he slid out of her. And yet, she knew with a sickening certainty what she'd done. She'd had sex with Alan. She wanted to blame it on the wine, but she knew all too well that she hadn't drunk anything like enough to impair her judgment that much. And he hadn't forced her either. She'd made a very poor decision, based on the urge to do something, anything, that distracted her from the deaths.
Fuck,
she thought again. Abigail pulled back, staring at him. He was half-dressed, his cock hanging out of his trousers. She would have